If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Have we made it clear yet to the people that we're going to Star Trek Las Vegas?
No, I don't think we have.
Tickets bought, air travel and hotel arranged.
Do we have tickets to the con?
No, of course not. I'm going to give them my credit card information after seeing their massive breach.
do they have a massive breach?
Oh, dude, yeah.
They're venting crewmen into space?
They're venting credit card plasma.
Oh, no.
It's a bad, like a friend of the podcast, Bree Belke, I think had her credit card snuffed. Like a bunch of friends of DeSoto threw in and then had to like get new credit cards and stuff for it. So I don't know about you. I'm going to be paying cash on the day of. Cash like a gentleman. That's me.
You know, something else we should probably make clear is we are going to destroy the Falcon.
That's right.
This was something we were using as a incentive during the pledge drive, during the Max Fun drive. We said if we got 2,000 new and upgrading supporters, we would do it, and we did, and we're going to do it.
We're going to do it. We make no promises about timeline. However, we're working even now on how to get this done with alacrity.
I'm really excited about it. A couple of friends of DeSoto have offered to send us a drone for use in this video. I was just thinking, like, we talked about dropping this thing into a pool to kind of contain all the pieces when it flies apart. Fly it apart, then, you say.
Right.
and if we find a pool, I feel like we're going to want some like overhead shots of the situation. So
I might put this out on the streets right now. If you're a pool person in or around the Los Angeles area, we're auditioning pools.
One thing that I do have genuine fear surrounding is the idea of building this model and then putting it in a car and taking it somewhere to break it.
What do you mean? Like it would be stolen out of your parked car?
No, I'm just saying like going around a corner, it's going to like slide over and break, you know?
Come on, man. You just seatbelt that in, it's going to ride shotgun. It's going to be fine. You know it would be great? Destroy the Falcon with an airbag.
Just plow through a four-lane intersection and let fate take the wheel.
That would be an exquisitely nerdy way to die if in the driver's seat, like the Claymore mine that is the Lego Millennium Falcon explodes via airbag and then just tears shrapnel throughout the entire car.
Yeah.
Killed by Dork.
Well, anyways, we're working all these details out. How many vehicular manslaughters we will be perpetrating in the process, et cetera, so, we'll keep you guys posted on that, and I'm looking forward to dropping that video.
Yeah. Y'all will know when we know.
Adam, It's been a while since you've checked the P.O. box, and I understand that you were just there at the P.O. box store. Do you have any mail you want to open up?
Ben, I have so much mail.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Ben, the box on top is the heaviest box. It is 25 pounds.
Whoa.
I know this because my friends at the UPS store made mention of that and how not enjoyable it was to take care of this thing for the week that they had it. So I'm going to start there.
You know, that Millennium Falcon is like over 30 pounds shipping weight.
Cannot rule out that that's what's in here, Ben. This package is from John from Parker, Colorado. Ben, what we have in this box is a lot of beer.
Wow.
What we have is a six-pack of River Runners Pale Ale from the Eddie Lion Brewery.
Wow.
We have got Due East IPA.
Just a
from the Boulder Beer Company.
A surfeit of podcasting fluid. Is this all Colorado?
Let's see. Yes, looks like it is. We got Big Juicy Freak Double IPA, so probably your favorite from the Denver Beer Company.
Why is that my favorite?
That was your college nickname. And then we got Death Before Disco Porter of the Left Hand Brewing Company. I remember having Left Hand beer during our time in Denver.
Yeah.
Doing shows there. So, wow, a hell of a care package.
Yeah.
From our friend John, there is a letter here. Suggested off-air reading. So I'm going to keep the letter to myself and just thank our friend John from Colorado for sending us a lot of things to drink on the occasion of Ben's next visit to Seattle.
Yeah, thank you, John. That's great. Looking forward to drinking.
It's incredibly generous to send us beer, especially because of how expensive it is to ship. Like, wow. Ben, our next package sent to us from Leslie and Alice from Shakopee, Minnesota. Shakopee? Shakopee?
Ankylosaur.
What we have here is a box bursting with Girl Scout cookies.
Hell yeah.
So many Girl Scout cookies. We've got...
This is not the first box of Girl Scout cookies we've been sent, by the way.
Oh, you were sent a box that I did not have access to.
Oh, I think she sent some to you and some to me.
Wow. That is really nice. It includes all my favorites. The Caramel Delights being my number one. And then we got Thin Mints and S'mores.
One of the things that I have often thought as an adult is I want Girl Scout cookies, but I feel weird about the idea of having to get to know some Girl Scouts.
Well, you're supposed to park your van on the other side of the parking lot and then get out on foot and then go into the grocery store where they sell them, Ben. You don't have to,
They sell them in the grocery store in Seattle?
My experience is they hang out at the entrance/exit to your local grocery.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's where they gather.
How convenient.
Our letter enclosed is from Leslie and Alice, and in parentheses, the scout. So Alice being the scout. Dear Ben and Adam, thank you so much for this awesome podcast. It has been a great stress reliever for me, and I even have made new friends. The many Facebook groups have made it fun to be on Facebook again, and I enjoy interacting with all the great friends of DeSoto. That goes for one of us.
You know, one of my great regrets is having made Facebook palatable to more people.
The live shows were a blast, too. I got to hang out with a great group of Minnesota FOD. And that's the truth. We love doing shows in Minnesota, that's for sure.
Hell of a place.
Please enjoy these Girl Scout cookies. It's my way of saying thanks. This helps me support my kids' goal of getting 1,000 boxes sold without eating a bunch myself. She doesn't like to make things easy on me. Thank you, Leslie and Alice.
I will share that I shared some of my Girl Scout bounty with... folks at MaximumFun.org, office staff there, and they also really appreciated it.
Good job by you. Ben, our third package is contained within a Shuttlecraft Galileo cardboard box.
Fun.
It's from Liz from Washington, D.C., I've been given specific opening instructions. Oh, that's because when you open it, it's also printed inside. I'm going to Jackie and Lori you a picture of this. It's pretty great.
Oh, man, that is cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right?
I bet we have some action figures that would be to scale in that box.
Speaking of action figures, what we have inside is a Star Trek Master Series Latinum Edition 7 of 9 figurine.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Look at her. It's 7 of 9 in statuette form. Letter inside from Elizabeth goes like this. Dear Ben and Adam, I'm not exaggerating when I say your podcast has changed my life.
Wow.
The community that has emerged out of TGG is the best thing on the internet. Facebook, it's not just for Russian election thieves anymore. I've met true friends and established relationships that have made my life better. You helped me find my best friends. I'm slightly embarrassed writing this, but it's true. Enclosed, you will find a weird-ass statue I was gifted, but I don't know what to do with. Oh, great. Thanks, Elizabeth. Thanks for your sincere note of gratitude and your re-gifted statue.
Well, John Roderick has a number of other co-hosts that also have weird, sexy lady statues in their offices. So now you join that August society.
Anyway, I hope one of your wives gives you permission to display this, and I hope this motivates you to do Voyager next. Voyager! Better than you remember. Live long and prosper, pod dads, and thanks. Love, Elizabeth, all caps Janeway.
Whoa.
P.S. Thanks for coming to D.C. 2 times. Keep it up. We love D.C.
We'll be back in D.C.
Yeah, no question. This next one is from Kim from Pflugerville, Texas. Kim has enclosed a couple of Jim Shimoda things. I'm going to see if the letter can give me any more insight. To the prophet's greetings from the ass end of the Alpha Quadrant, things just haven't been the same around here since you decided to blow up the Facebook butthole. We understand why you did it, but we miss you. Boy, lots of Facebook talk.
Really? Like, it's round. Like we get off Facebook and it comes at us through the fucking mail.
We were cleaning out our closet on the promenade and ran across these Jim Shimoda magnets.
Were these, like, a product that were available for sale?
No. We thought that would make a nice gift for you, so we stuck them in an orb case and dropped them off at Quark's. He knows a guy that knows a guy with a really fast ship. Also, thank you so much to Ben for his attempt at singing our theme song. It's a very good thing you didn't know how the theme to the song to Enterprise goes.
Good thing that my memory is bad. I've always said this.
Having that particular song in so many viewers' heads would have resulted in 1,000 one-star reviews on iTunes, so bullet dodge there. Thanks again, Jim Shimoda with a G.
Well, you know, I'm glad that Jim Shimoda exists. I'm just not glad that Facebook exists.
It's fair.
You know, I wish that one could exist without the other. I think it could. I wish everybody listening to this just got off Facebook all at once and...
Wow.
The people running Facebook were like, what the fuck? Why did, like, 30,000 people just leave our service?
Wow.
That would be great. And then they tracked us down and they had us killed.
That doesn't sound fun to me. How about they just kill you?
Okay.
You're the one with that crazy idea.
I mean, you don't think Facebook is good.
I do not think it's good. Ben, in the package sent to us by Megan in Australia, my heart skipped a beat because what I have pulled out of this package is a cookbook. The cookbook is called In My Kitchen. Its author is Nana Visitor.
Whoa!
It appears to be signed by Nana Visitor.
Whoa! Is this Megan of Megan and Imogen?
The inscription inside says, to Ben and Adam, enjoy this. And then signed below, Nana Visitor. If this is some kind of prank, Megan, going to be deeply upset. But I don't think it is. This looks legit. There's a letter. I'm going to read it. Maybe there's more information.
Read it.
Dear Ben and Adam, nothing said fuck 2018 and fuck cancer better than voyaging on Big Rod Afloat, a.k.a. Star Trek The Cruise 3.
Oh, man.
It was truly a blast. and you will see my bald noggin in many a photo on the official crew site at StarTrekTheCruise.com. The only thing missing on the cruise was your good selves. A bit of pirate pod in Big Rod's pocket would have been ace. That said, there were many FODs and a fellow Jim Shimoda.
Wow.
I told Nana all about you. And in parentheses, she is beyond lovely. She signed her book for you.
Wow.
I just kind of got the chills reading that, Megan. That is incredible. We're so glad that you are feeling well enough to go on the cruise.
Yeah.
Certainly. And wow, just really glad that you made some friends there and there were some other friends of DeSoto to keep you company. That's rad.
I love that that's like becoming a thing at these Star Trek events is like, people in the shirts and with the pins and stuff just kind of like winking at each other.
This email address in the inscription.
Yeah, it seems like she's saying she's open to communicating with us.
Does that take me to her?
I don't know.
Is that something I should write?
I think you should write an email to that.
I am going to start up a donor support podcast feed that's making every single recipe in this book. There's pictures and stuff in here, and there's stories.
Is it a particular style of cooking? Is it just kind of home recipes, or...?
It looks like it's just all her favorites.
Wow.
She's so great. Thank you so much, Megan. Our next package is from Dan from Arcata, California.
Arcata is the seat of Humboldt County, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm smelling the package. Dan has sent a Star Trek Mad Libs.
Whoa.
With a post-it that says, Ben and Adam, I simply want to say thank you for bringing so much joy and fun into my ear holes. Live long and prosper, your true friend of DeSoto, Dan. Thanks, Dan.
Star Trek Mad Libs could be like a whole kind of Marin.
Oh, shit. You're right.
Thank you for sending that.
Thank you very much. We got an envelope here from Jacob from Dearborn, Michigan. Jacob has included a picture of a canine police dog named Worf.
Whoa.
Dear Ben and Adam, now that Mr. Worf is established on DS9, I have enclosed a trading card that I suspect you do not have. My otherwise very serious local police department employs a canine officer named Commander Worf.
Cool.
Who is in fact trained in Klingon verbal commands. His handler carries these cards with him to hand out to children. I have brought much dishonor to my house in the face of a very tall policeman in order to obtain this card. Please enjoy.
Man.
That's Jake in Dearborn. Ben, our next package comes to us from Kevin out of Northport, Florida. It is a bunch of credentials for something that took place October 26th through 28th, 2018.
I'll tell you what's going on here. This guy went to a bunch of different things and then put his credentials on like a doorknob in his house, and then eventually they stacked up and he's like, I gotta do something with these. He tried to pawn them off on us.
Kevin, we don't want your trash. Get your trash out of here. Maybe Kevin will explain in his letter that goes like this. Adam and Ben, so... I work for a company that produces event credentials for festivals, conventions, etc.
Oh.
And we often end up with some extras.
Yeah.
So when this one event came through last October, I instantly thought of you guys. Here are some laminates and lanyards from Northeast TrekCon in Albany, which took place in October 26, 2018. Thought you might like them. Kinda neat. Also, I've included some Star Trek TNG pogs that resurfaced in my possession during a round of spring cleaning. Kevin gives us his garbage.
Man, Kevin could have been some help to us last year because we were making like company IDs for Uxbridge Shimoda. Here's a little pro tip to everyone out there. If you're ever like traveling with gear, if you have an ID with your face on it from the company that you work at, and you work for a company that claims to be a media company like Uxbridge Shimoda does, you can get discounts on checked luggage fees at the airport.
Ben, our final package of the day.
Woo! I thought we'd never get there.
Comes from Grand Prairie, Texas. No name on the exterior. Probably smart. We have got a lot of bubble wrap protecting the Star Trek The Next Generation communicator walkie-talkie.
Wow.
The letter inside... unsigned, says, "Now you'll never be apart." It is so threatening.
Wow.
I'm going to send you a picture of the kid wearing this on the box, which is absurd. Isn't that silly?
Oh, man.
I think they got the scale wrong.
Yeah, not to scale.
That is hilarious.
I like that there is a little inset picture of a different kid wearing the same communicator, presumably to show that that one in the lower left corner has a friend.
A friend that he's talking to, but
it's strange credulity to imagine that that kid has a friend.
This is going to be my new Twitter profile pic. The kid with the too large communicator. It is ridiculous. Oh, there's even a picture of them together.
Oh, cute.
Just like you and me, Ben.
That's gonna be how we keep in touch when we're at STLV.
So ends the opening of the mail, Ben.
Christ, do we have to do an episode now?
I think we should wrap it up here. Thanks for listening. What are we watching next week?
We'll just skip Little Green Men. We would be run out of town on a rail.
I don't think we'd ever be forgiven.
No.
Well, with our remaining time, Ben, let's turn our attention towards an episode that is just as much fun to experience. It's Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 7, Little Green Men.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
It is a bit of a rite of passage for young Nog. He's getting ready to go away to Starfleet Academy. And what you do when you're a Ferengi boy about to head off into the world and make his own way is you sell all your crap.
Let the bind commence!
I bet my parents wish that this was a human ritual.
I bet most parents do this as a human ritual.
My mom has been trying to convince me for like 3 months to fly home and empty the closet of my childhood bedroom.
Why don't you? You think it's her job to schlep around your shit for the rest of your life?
The reason I don't is I don't think that there's anything in there.
Oh, it's stuff that she should know to throw away that she just hasn't?
Yeah, it's like software boxes for Final Cut Pro version 1, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's a great version.
We don't need to
save
that.
That's a great big box also.
Yeah, it works great on Mac OS 8.
Mm, hey, that's the OS that John Roderick uses. Which of your boyhood items would have the most value to you in a garage sale type setting? Because there are a few of these that Nog gives relative deference to, but yet they're all for sale. Everything must go.
It's his PJs. I saw some desiccated bodies pucks there. So definitely like some
He's selling grandma.
Yeah, grandma's definitely among his personal effects.
No reasonable offer will be refused.
Quark is not psyched about this, right?
No, because any reminder of Nog's entrance into Starfleet Academy is something that he just disagrees with.
Another character that's suspicious of it is Worf, which is surprising because Worf probably the first Klingon to go through Starfleet Academy, right?
Yeah, something that I think O'Brien reminds him of. Like, Worf, remember how painful it is to be othered.
Yeah, seems like a pretty hypocritical stance for you to be taking right now, Worf.
He does see the utility of a tooth sharpener, which is nice.
You gotta wash the tooth sharpener before you stick it in your mouth.
That Foley work on the sound, I think, is very good. Very well done. As soon as he touches that thing to the tooth.
Having had a lot of dental work done recently, I did not like.
Worf will buy that tooth sharpener, and then we will never see it again.
Thank goodness. Get it out of here.
Quark's cousin has finally given Quark the shuttle that they've been promised for years and years. This is a real inherit-a-vehicle situation.
It's because Quark lent his cousin a bunch of money back in the day when Rom gives it a once over. He's like, yeah, this thing is in great condition. You don't even, you know, routine maintenance isn't for a long time.
By the way, you need a new Johnson rod in here.
We've made the joke before, but it feels like shuttles of this kind and size really evoke an RV type vibe, right? And
right.
So if you've been gifted an RV, I think the first thing you need to do is check the wastewater and the like make sure it doesn't smell.
Right. Make sure that nobody has ever used the toilet.
Like number one only. That's the rule of all RVs, right?
Yeah. Did you tell me that or where did we learn that?
I think that was a Roderickism.
Yeah. That once you use it for anything other than number one, it's never the same.
Yeah. Go on the side of the road where that belongs.
Do what the Dave Matthews Band does and dump it off the side of a bridge.
Right.
So it turns out Nog is going to fly private to college, which
not bad.
Pretty fancy.
Yeah.
Quark has paid $250,000 to defraud the admissions board at Starfleet Academy by photoshopping Nog's head onto a soccer player.
Hold on a second. Are you making Quark into a Laughlin type situation? An alleged Laughlin?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I could get with that.
We don't know his last name, but I'm thinking it might be Laughlin.
You need to do a bunch of things before you leave your home for the last time in a while, right? And one of those things is you need to get one last balcony hang in and say goodbye to your good friend Jake.
Yeah.
That was a good spot.
The best.
I liked this moment. You know, like, I feel like DS9 has done things to throw us off the scent before, like making it seem like a character is leaving and having us go through the emotional motions of this. But I did not expect myself to be reacting in this way when they did it with Nog.
And how did you react?
I mean, I was sad. I felt like they did a good job of kind of evoking, like, the meaning of place when we had that scene, you know?
They didn't hug, though, did they? I don't remember them hugging in this scene.
I don't know.
Maybe it's just my latent cynicism around everything these days that made it seem like I was going for something more from some close friends there.
Well, one thing that occurred to me was maybe their friendship was closer when they were younger. Because like when you're a kid, your friends are just like whatever kids are around. And choosing your friends is largely a function of convenience. And then at a certain point, like when people start going away to college or not, and, you know, life starts changing, like the people that you like stay in touch with become a smaller subset of those. And I definitely remember around the time of going away to college that like the transience of some of the friendships of childhood started to become evident to one or both friends, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you think Keiko wrote Nog's letter of recommendation? Dear Starfleet Academy, I'm writing on behalf of a student of mine named Nog.
I'd really like to get rid of him, if at all possible.
My school recently exploded, which as a consequence allowed me to free myself from teaching Nog on the one hand, but now I give him to you. I've hid Nog in my ass.
Well, I guess Keiko is on Bajor right now, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess she's... Yeah. She doesn't really give a rip about it. I guess, but
she's,
you know,
in the bush. She's not writing any letters.
Would be nice to arrange for him not to be there when she comes back.
Yeah, what a relief.
Morn is going to be watching the bar because Quark doesn't trust the Ferengi that work for him.
Odo is totally amused by this in a I can't wait to see how badly this fucks you kind of way.
Vintage, like, season one level Odo Quark banter in this episode.
And the tension between Rom and Quark is also about the idea that Rom sees this as a fun thing that a father does for a son, and Quark sees it as a chance to make some quick lats.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be doing some smuggling on the way back to Earth.
Right. I forgot to write down what the material was.
Oh, that's chemosite, Ben.
Oh.
Chemosite.
Yeah.
Ask for it by name.
Apply it directly to the forehead.
Uh-huh. Golden cotton. The cut. Golden
cotton. So they all pile into this shuttlecraft. It's a nice fast ship, but they are kind of driving each other nuts along the way. This is a Rom, Nog, and Quark episode, so we just have to like get all of our time with the other characters on the show in the in ops, like as they depart, going like, boy, I'm sure glad we don't have to watch that episode. Basically,
the main cast is super psyched about this.
Yeah, you mean I can get out of the loaf early today? Rad.
I'm gonna be over in Crafty, just chilling. One thing that we should mention is that the gift that Nog has been given by O'Brien and Bashir is the sports almanac from Back to the Future, containing the whole of human knowledge,
right?
Like human history in an iPad.
It seems like Nog absorbs a fairly astonishing amount of this book in the journey, because I mean, most of what we see is just the three of them bickering, you know, like Rom getting up on his high horse about how Quark is smuggling, and then like them using that leverage to extract a commission off of Quark of the proceeds. And then they find that the ship is not quite as in ship shape as they had been led to believe.
I thought I told you to take us out of warp.
I'm trying, brother, but the warp core isn't responding.
Not a good look for Rom, TBH.
No.
Because when it blows a tire, it is a real emergency situation. It's a situation that requires the use of the chemo site.
Right. The only thing they can figure out to turn the warp engines off, because they can't eject it, is like flood the compartment that the chemo site is in with warp plasma and see if that will like bust the warp bubble and put their shuttle back into real space. And we get a kind of special effects exterior of the shuttle as it kind of dissolves into golden dust.
Ben, is it just me, or does the Ferengi shuttle look like the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile from the outside?
It's the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile with pincers.
Yeah. Really looks that way to me. I think it's probably just a kit-bashed wiener, right?
I mean, it's definitely the same general design as the one like when they were like negotiating for the Barzan wormhole in TNG, that those guys got lost in the Beta Quadrant.
Yeah,
they wake up and Quark is he's like on a slab in a room, and Rom and Nog are on slabs next to him, and they're in the past, Adam.
What if time travel were really this accidental? It is terrifying. Like, the tone of this episode, not terrifying.
No.
What if a spoon falls into your sink and into a running garbage disposal, and all of a sudden you were transported to 1947?
If that happens to me, I'm just transported to Crate and Barrel to replace that spoon.
But it's like they're just doing Star Trek and they time travel. Like, yeah. That's all this is.
Right.
It's amazing and terrifying.
The idea of not giving that much of a shit about the fact that this happened is a very Star Trek convenience. The prospect of being trapped here forever is discussed a bunch of times, and it never feels like the end of life as we know it for these characters.
It isn't long before they run into Charles Napier.
Yeah.
Who I am a big fan of from his work in Rambo First Blood Part 2. Charles Napier playing Rex Denning, the cigar-chomping general in this episode.
It's a hell of a combination.
Who watches over the airbase in Roswell, New Mexico.
Of course, I'm a big fan of his work in Ernest Goes to Jail.
You're going to make me find Ernest Goes to Jail drops. Cool.
Yeah, I am.
Quark cannot figure out how a door works because of its knob.
Yeah, it's possible that whatever Worf has is catching.
Yeah.
But they're in this room. It's like one of those interrogation rooms where there's a one-way glass mirror in there, so they can't see out, but there's a dark room full of 1947 government types that can see in, and that's we get like a camera pan to the calendar to establish when and where they are, and it's like the Roswell story told from the perspective that Quark and his brother and nephew are the aliens that crashed at Roswell.
When does this episode signal to you that it's a comedy?
Oh, I think that what you want to look for is like that opening. There's a tracking shot right at the, like the first shot of the episode. It's panning along all of the crap that Nog is going to sell. And then the camera pans up and it shows that it's about Ferengi.
Hey, your paper's just coming through on this side, Ben. How to tell when Star Trek episode is a comedy.
Yeah.
By Benjamin R. Harrison. All right. I'll give that a look. And I think that I picked up on that a little too late.
Yeah, I mean, the comedy works some of the time in this episode.
It's hard because Star Trek has had a history of not being very good at comedy.
Nothing makes me laugh. I wish to learn.
This would be an example of that.
Right.
But if you just lean into silly... Like, here's the thing. I think silly is different than comedy.
Yeah.
And I think you can judge silly a little less critically than comedy. And
right.
So I think you'll enjoy this episode if you proceed from that spot.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a weird middle path that it takes, right? Because it's like, I mean, the premise of like, hey, like, let's get some alien characters from Star Trek that we know and do the Roswell story. That is like sold in the room, right? Like, that's a great premise for an episode.
And then you say Ferengi, and the producer's like, get out!
This is that done with like, the most Star Trek corniness that we get in, like, this era of Star Trek, right?
Yeah. This is Rascals-level corny.
Yeah, which was also a Ferengi episode.
True.
So let's talk about the human characters. We've got the general, Rex Denning.
Just photographs. Under no circumstances are you to engage the enemy.
We've got Professor Carlson.
This is one of the most important events in human history.
His girlfriend, Nurse Garland, who is a military nurse.
The only thing I can tell you for sure is they're not human.
And we've got a captain, Captain Wainwright.
Turns out it was just a weather balloon.
Who's kind of hawkish, more hawkish than in general, I would say.
Real hawkish.
And then there's like a, you know, plenty of MPs and other kind of background figures. Like the professor is there to be the like first contact Amy Adams in Arrival, like try to communicate with the aliens guy. The general at one point turns to him and is like, look, professor, we didn't just ask you here because exposition. You know, like...
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why they tried to write him as caring about anything more than the fact that he's meeting extraterrestrials for the first time, but, like, he, like, turns to the nurse at one point and is like...
Here we are in the middle of one of the greatest discoveries in human history, and all I can think about is what you're going to look like in your wedding dress.
It's not real. Like, that's not even Star Trek corny. That's just corny.
It's hard to criticize a science fiction show for not being real in its treatment of 1940s America. Like, none of this is real.
Yeah.
We shouldn't care.
Perhaps the most absurd scene in the ep is when the humans first come into the room and are actually face-to-face with the Ferengi, and they all start kind of bonking themselves in the head. Because their universal translators are not working, and the humans interpret this as some kind of greeting, so they start doing the same thing.
Nog has had 20 minutes with the almanac, so he tells everyone that they're in 1940s Earth, and these are Australians or something.
Right. I mean, like, we get some human dialogue from the Ferengi perspective, and it was, I thought, like, a pretty good effect, garbling the speech.
Yes, I agree.
And, like, the Ferengi language, which I don't know if we've ever heard before, like Ferengis speaking Ferengi. But
sounded new.
Yeah, but we got some of that, and that was nice. And I feel like, you know, like Armin Shimerman can act through nonsense language, you know?
It's true.
He really has this character down in a way where you give him a bunch of nonsense phrases, like he knows what the real meaning is and acts accordingly.
Grandfatharic umax.
This episode was shot kind of like a stage play.
Yeah.
Wherein you get establishing shot of Air Force Base exterior, which they throw to a couple of times. It's just airplane foreground, hangar background, a couple of different times of day. And then you've got the interior of the lab, and then you've got the interior of the shuttle, and then you've got DS9, and I think those are the only locations that we have.
I wondered if they put like a... very thin tobacco filter on the camera for the scenes in 1947, because they looked like a little yellowed and a little old-timey.
The light was also unflattering to makeup.
Yeah, you can see the seams in the makeup a little bit more than normal, like where the latex stops and the real skin starts on the cheeks, on the Ferengi.
All the lab scenes look very fluorescently lit, and it's really unforgiving. Like, yeah, that pretty tough challenge, especially for as many close-ups as there are in this app. You really get to see under the seams, unfortunately.
Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Exactly. Speaking of tough challenges, the communication issue is the big problem. So eventually they ply Nurse Garland for one of her hairpins, and Rom is able to get the universal translator in Nog's ear back going. So presumably there's something like deep inside their heads that's working, right? Because it's in the communicators in TNG. Like the communicator badge has the universal translator in it.
Why not just put it right into your head? I kind of like this idea.
And like, spoiler alert, when Odo shows up, no problem with him.
Nope. Yeah, where does he keep his translator? Do you think all of the dialogue on the base is looped? And the reason I ask is not only for the Ferengi language scenes, but the broken universal translator scene is another example, but also because there's an old-timey oscillating fan in the room where this dialogue is happening. Yeah. And I don't know about you, Ben, but if I were shooting a scene with dialogue, I would do everything in my power to make sure that there wasn't an old-timey oscillating fan in the room, you know?
Yeah.
And you never hear it in the show audio.
Right.
So I'm thinking that's what happened.
Yeah. A strange choice.
Yeah.
But maybe they were shooting somewhere where they knew that they weren't going to be able to use the audio anyways.
Maybe. This is an episode where Star Trek talks a lot about its judgments on either the present or the not-so-distant past. The self-righteousness of Star Trek is very apparent throughout this episode, especially when it comes to things like tobacco.
Yeah, but it's interesting and fun to get it from the perspective of characters that we tend to judge as being worse than the humans in the
series.
Yeah,
like, who has more vices than Quark? And here's Quark making fun of people for smoking 2 cigarettes at the same time.
Right.
Like, people have been fucked to death in his holosuites before, you know? Like he's seen the dead-end street of a vice gone wrong.
Right. And so, the guys that sharpen their own teeth are judging people for period-appropriate smoking. They also judge the cigarettes, but never judge the cigar. Because the general's always chomping on a cigar.
Right.
But that's never addressed. It's like it's two different things.
Weird.
Why is Rom wearing digi camo?
Rom shops exclusively at Cabela's. I don't like that.
Yeah. So speaking of police dogs, Adam, there is a military dog walking around this base, and at one point the professor like stoops down to like pet the dog. The general's not like, "Don't pet that dog, sir." You know? Don't military dogs get their teeth replaced with like metal teeth and shit?
Oh no, do they?
Yeah, I think the SEALs like go into battle with German shepherds that have like augmented metal teeth.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah. It's kind of fucked up.
Jeez. Is this a whole duck fucking theory that you have that turns out to be wrong, or are you
saying
this?
What do you mean duck fucking theory?
I mean, you mentioned on an episode not too long ago, Ben, that you wanted your duck fucking to be consensual, and there's no such thing as consensual duck fucking.
I mean, I'm not a biologist. I don't know what.
I think we can agree that it's sad that a doggy would have his teeth replaced for military reasons. That's not fun.
Yeah.
It's like the whole weaponized dolphins thing you read about.
Yeah.
That's not cool either. Leave the animals alone.
They're not weaponized. They're just like able to swim up to harbor mines and put trackers on them, right?
Yeah. I think that's the deal.
Yeah.
First lesson in training a dolphin, Ben, is teaching a dolphin to stop trying to fuck you. That's rule number one.
Wait a second. Are dolphins and ducks the same now? What's wrong with you, Adam?
We should not be listened to for any information about animals. We shouldn't be listened to at all, also.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're talking about Wainwright, right?
Yeah.
Wainwright pets the doggy so often, but if Wainwright was actually taking notice of the dog's behavior, he would have been able to tell that this dog is not pissing or shitting, because if it had, it would have gone gold, because this is Dogodo.
Do you think that it would piss and then like that scene in Terminator 2 where the chunk of metal that was left in the car would like reabsorb into its foot?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, this is Dogodo.
Hello, Quark.
And Dogodo is going to work with the Ferengi on getting them back. He's been over to where their shuttle is. It's in a hangar nearby. Still in pretty good working order, despite having crash landed.
Quark making a feeble case here to stay behind and change the timeline completely and run Earth as its leader.
Yeah, he sees this as a big business opportunity. And
yeah.
Part of the business opportunity he sees is that they're going to sell their shuttle to the primitive forebears of the Ferengi Alliance in this timeline.
Right.
There's some discussion in like when they're on their way out there that the Ferengi didn't in fact invent warp technology themselves. They had to buy it off of somebody else.
I like that backstory. It totally fits together.
Yeah, that's fun. And so he thinks that maybe like they can take over the quadrant at this point in time because they'll be so far ahead of everybody else technologically.
Once they get the translator working, Quark starts to do this wheeling and dealing with Rex. He's like, I'd love to sell you my information, but if you aren't interested in buying, I'll sell to the Russians.
I didn't know it was supposed to happen like this.
He's trying to be like intergalactic arms dealer here.
Right.
And General Denning does not like the hard sell, right?
No, he's not a fan.
Doesn't react well to it. Reacts so badly to it, in fact, that eventually Quark winds up strapped to a chair getting sodium pentothal injected into him.
And no amount of this is changing his behavior. It's pretty great. He's got a high tolerance.
Yeah. I have totally lost my booze tolerance lately.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you take a break?
Well, I actually took a page from the Adam's Wife playbook and started not drinking on weekdays.
Mm-hmm.
And man, like I had like one rum cocktail last night and I was like, wow, I'm like totally drunk off this one cocktail.
It's nice, right?
That hasn't happened in forever.
That's good value.
Yeah.
You're making money, Ben.
I'm back to being a cheap date.
Finally.
Finally.
Our touring expenses are going to go down as a result.
Yeah, I'm not going to be bringing a pint of tequila out on stage with me.
Just to feel anything.
Yeah.
There's a real Three Stooges reaction from the gang while Quark is being tortured.
Yeah. I thought that that Captain Wainwright was kind of a weird casting move.
Yeah?
Like, he's got a very kind face, this actor.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
This actor is James McDonald. Like, he's been in, like, NCIS, JAG, CSI. Like, he lives in procedural television land, I feel
mm-hmm.
like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like he's selling how evil this is, you know?
His face betrays him, right?
Like, I think you would need to be kind of like a psychopath.
You know who he needed to be? He needed to be Muscle Face guy from The X-Files, and he's not.
Right. Yeah. I think kind of brings out one of the big problems with this episode, which is that it is a little distracted from the idea of like what a big deal it would be to the humans in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
All of the jokes and lulls are either like fish out of water stuff or like this is inconvenient for Quark and Quark is obsessed with making money.
Mm-hmm.
And the episode is like emphatically disinterested with the humans coping with what a big deal this would be.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just look at any other movie or TV show about the first time humans make contact with an extraterrestrial intelligence. It's a huge deal. And Like, these humans are, like, walking around like, oh, like, they want to sell us something. Cool. Well, you know, like, it's mundane. It's procedural.
Like, there's no humanity to it. It's all military superseding that.
Right. And the idea that this guy would just be like, well, we didn't get, like, exactly what we wanted from one conversation with them, so I'm going to start torturing. I mean, like, I could kind of believe that that kind of guy exists, but I don't think that he's selling what that is.
Faith Garland is the only character that shows any humanity during this episode, and it's not in the way that you're hoping, you know? She has hope for the future of humanity type humanity, but it's not directed at what's right in front of her, which are aliens in her presence.
Right. During the torture scene, Nog makes a big show of breaking, like he can't stand it anymore, so he's going to show where the Ferengi invasion fleet is going to land.
You mean your people are going to invade Cleveland?
I hope they don't destroy Cleveland. One of the great chicken wings I've ever had was in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. That was a really fun live show. We should go back to Cleveland sometime.
Yeah.
And this is where they get the drop on him, right? There's like one MP and one torture guy, and the professor and the nurse and the Ferengi like beat everybody up. She distracts a couple more MPs, and they run out, and they're almost home free when General Denning and some more army guys come out, hot, 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 and they've almost got him, but then Dagodo ungoos behind them and beats everybody up. I guess he's disguised himself as a space saver spare on the back of a Jeep.
We used to talk a lot about missed opportunities on this show, and I feel like we haven't in a while because the quality of the show has gotten so much better. But I think there was an opportunity here to do the thing that you were aching for, which is if you have Odo go gold in the foreground where they're looking, I think you could melt Rex Denning's mind at seeing this.
Right.
But as it is, he appears as quasi-humanoid behind them, and so you never get the mind melt moment of them... Of a Rex Denning actually, like, having that moment.
None of the humans realizes.
His reality shattered.
None of the humans, like, realizes or processes that there's a second kind of alien at play.
Yes, yeah.
Which would be another totally big deal. Like, and the nurse, like, basically doesn't care. She's just like, come on, you know. Come on, man that used to be a tire, let's go.
Like, no one changes by the end of this episode. And I think there are candidates that could. I felt like Rex was being set up to be one of those people that does, and this was a moment that it could have taken place.
I don't make the orders. I take them just like you.
Right.
But as it was, he will live on to chomp cigars and order Wainwright around.
Yeah.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A fucking pail.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Time travel's so easy, Ben, that all you need to do is harness the power of an exploded atomic bomb, and you're on your way home.
Yeah, they use the rest of their keto site, and, you know, they just happen to have enough, and Rom happens to get the timing just right that they fly their shuttle into, like, I think it's a, like, stock film of an actual atom bomb going off.
It is.
Another thing that they're highly judgmental of is, like, setting off nukes in your own atmosphere.
Faith is the only one that gets it. At the end, she's like, she's put it together. She's put together the idea of humanity's role in the galaxy.
She's still in love with her professor boyfriend, despite the fact that he does not get it.
You get the craziest ideas.
Fucking Jeff, like, pats her on the top of the head and, like, says, "That's okay, honey." Like, like, on his way to take her to become pregnant and a barefoot for the rest of her life. Sort of a tragic ending to the Faith story, I think, is that, like, she's the only one who has an imagination and is right in her prognostications and, like, will never be... She will never achieve her potential because it's 1947.
Right, but unlike... Like, it's not an episode that feels like it's building her up in that way,
right.
Like it feels like it's dunking on her for being a forward-looking person.
Yeah, it turns it into a joke.
Yeah, so unfortunate, but they get back to the station. The button on the episode is Quark is getting hauled off to the cooler because of his attempted smuggling nonsense, and it's a big slide whistle ending to a slide whistle episode.
Boy, oh boy. Ben, why do they sell the shuttle for salvage?
It doesn't make sense. Like,
this is the little D problem, right? Like, let Quark keep the shuttle so that he can have bottle episodes and shit with it. Like,
right.
This is his little D.
I know. It is such a small change that could have so many interesting storylines.
Yeah.
Why in the world would they need to pay for passage from Earth to a Federation outpost?
Right.
When the Federation is a moneyless society, why would the cost of that be roughly equivalent to a working, very good Ferengi shuttle? Doesn't make any sense.
You really want to do this here, now? Okay, let's do it! Do it!
Really feels like we've been speedbagging the episode, Ben, but did you like it?
I'll tell you where I turned on this episode. I liked it a lot in its telling me its premise and its, like, inhabiting this funny world. But there's this scene, I think the, like, military guys have left, and Rom is, like, monkeying around with Nog's ear, trying to get the translator working. And Nurse Garland turns to the professor and is speculating about their, you know, their family relationships. Like, you know, that one could be the little one's dad. And then there's the suggestion that maybe Quark is the mother. And I feel like this show has done this a bunch of times now where it makes a joke of Quark is a girl. How hilarious would that be if Quark was a girl? And, like, it's not a funny joke. It's not a good bit. And the bits that they've tried and that they try in this episode tend to be really bad, you know, tend to be really corny. And then that one is just like, you know, like, it always sucks when they do that. Are you feeling me on that?
I feel like that is a joke about Quark's relative ugliness as a thing, rather than any sort of comment on gender, personally.
I don't know if it's a comment on gender or not. I just think that, like, it's really weak tea. If they tried it once and it was great, I could see, like, dipping into that well again, but it's not working, you know? Just leave it behind.
I really approach this episode with an open mind because I am one who is not very accepting of Star Trek's experiments with comedy. And I think there was a moment and I'm not going to say it goes back to the script phase. I think in between script and production, you could have made the choice to turn this into more of an X-Files episode than a Mars Attacks style
right.
vibe.
Yeah.
As I was watching this episode, playing concurrently in my mind was the X-Filesification of it. Like, if you turn down the lights a little bit, if
right.
you made the room as smoky as it should have been, given all the smoking that was happening in the room, I think you can still have some comedic elements here.
Yeah.
And some thoughtfulness here that makes it work. But this episode is like so self-aware of its broad appeal. I feel like this episode knows that it's going to be popular because of its subject matter.
Right. I hope people don't hate us for not liking it that much.
Yeah, when an episode is this self-aware or a movie is this self-aware about how it will be received, I feel like what it does frequently is it dumbs itself down to the lowest common denominator so
right.
that it can achieve the broadest possible appeal.
Right, so it can be more of a television event and you don't even have to watch the show to get what's going on in it.
That's a great description of what I'm trying to say. It feels like a very special episode. And I think that is one of the reasons it is good and not great, you know?
Right.
So that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah. I wonder what would have happened if they'd ever gotten, like, actual comedy writers to come in and work a script like this.
I think it would be terrible because my position is keep comedy out of Star Trek. Like, incidental comedy is fun and funny when they do it on this show, but every time they try, every time, it's not good.
Yeah, like, who would be stupid enough to try and combine comedy and Star Trek?
It never works. Ben, you know what works almost all the time is checking our priority one email box. You want to see what's in there?
I do.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a commercial nature. The message goes like this. In a universe as vast as time itself, secrets, danger, and adventure await those willing to discover. Black Star is an audio drama about a pilot who can cast and control black holes.
Whoa.
Each of Black Star's 9 chapters were conceived from the start to be a treat for your ears and for your mind's eye. It's a tale told through environmental ambiance of alien worlds, distinct sounds of character actions, a dynamic cast, and an original 75-piece soundtrack.
Wow.
Don your headphones to be immersed in Black Star.
Dang.
And Black Star is by Randy Greer on Audible and the iTunes Store. So to save the galaxy and experience this cosmic story yourself, you can find Black Star in both of those places.
That sounds really interesting. Kind of like a premium podcast story experience.
Yeah, fully produced thing.
Yeah, having seen an orchestra play TV music recently, kind of curious about that. Yeah.
Yeah, Black Star. You can find it on Audible and the iTunes Store.
And it's not the one with Mos Def and Talib Kweli. It's a different Black Star.
It's not the David Bowie album.
Adam, we have another Priority One message here. It is of a personal nature. It's from Mike/Dad, and it's for Courtney and Maple. It goes like this. I swore to she who is my wife and Trek 5 God that if this new job came through, I'd donate $100 to charity. Two special fellows such as yourselves with a podcast on a .org must count, right? Welcome to Baby Maple, too, since she'll have arrived by the time this is read. Yep, I'm your dad. Get used to it. $100 less than the old college fund.
Money well spent.
Yeah, definitely not a charity.
I love I'm your dad. Get used to it. As a catchphrase, it sounds like a late 90s ABC Friday night lineup catchphrase for someone.
Yeah, also...
I'm your dad. Get used to it.
Also, a perfectly good catchphrase is, try deducting us from your taxes. It's not going to work. but thank you for sending us some money, Mike, and congrats on the new baby.
Congrats to you and Maple.
Yeah.
Well, if you have an announcement of either a commercial or birth nature, you can take it on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, both of which are a great, great way to help with the ongoing production of this program. And neither are tax deductible.
Neither. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give it to Nog for asking for and receiving a hand job from Faith Garland. yeah, I mean, pretty pervy,
yeah.
But also in keeping with his character.
Yeah.
She does not know what she's doing.
No.
What about you, Ben?
Yeah, another thing that's played for laughs that is super gross. Yeah, my...
Well, I mean, the ears don't ejaculate, right?
We don't know that. We've never seen anybody umox to completion.
Right. It's just edging.
Yeah.
Hmm. Fair enough.
My drunk Shimoda is Worf for just putting that tooth sharpener right in his mouth without...
Gross.
...cleaning it first or dipping it in barbicide or whatever.
Yeah, that's really gnarly.
You know, for as much like revulsion as he has expressed at Ferengis, he seems awfully willing to swap spit with them.
It'd be interesting if one of Worf's character traits was his being a real germaphobe. That would be a fun tension within him, right?
Yeah.
Like, he loves stabbing people with a mechleth, but, like, he's got to clean it right away. Yeah.
Gotta get that cold press latch. Get that cold press latch.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Moms. Can't live with them. Can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply. When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
All right, Ben. What do we have coming up on the next episode?
Well, you get your board game unfolded there, buddy.
Doing it.
Next episode is season 4, episode 8, The S Word of Kaelas.
Uh-huh.
Kor, a revered Klingon warrior, sets out with Worf and Dax in search of a mythical ancient artifact that they believe has the power to unite the Klingon Empire.
Are we going to bring back cloned Kaelas in this episode?
Why don't we see if we're going to be doing anything in particular when we watch this episode?
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right. Got the die in my hand and the mic in another. I have rolled a 2.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Oh, shit.
We have jumped over the Traveler Square, which would have propelled us 5 spaces forward, and landed on regular old Square 91.
I said oh shit because I was reading it backwards. I thought we had hit a wormhole.
No, we're staring a wormhole in the face.
We are parked on a wormhole's doorstep, and the frequency with which we roll ones on this show means that is a distinct hazard next time we play the game of buttholes. The will of the prophets.
It's true. Wow. Well, regular old episode for you and me.
Yeah.
One of the favorite types of episodes.
Love them.
For anyone to hear.
Yeah.
That's what we do best, Ben.
That's what we do best.
We make Star Trek Pod.
What our listeners do best is support us. They support us in all kinds of ways. They leave nice reviews on the review websites. They recommend our show to friends. They go to MaximumFun.org/donate and contribute to the production of our show. We really, really appreciate all of that stuff. If you'd like to reach out to us and chat online, use the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. I'm on there as @BenjaminAHR. Adam is on there @CutForTime. You can also send us an email at DrunkShimoda@gmail.com. We read all of those. We don't necessarily reply to all of them because they're just too many and it would be a full-time job all by itself.
Rob so far has refused to do our email correspondence for us.
We got to thank some people, Adam. We got to thank Adam Ragusea for making all of the wonderful custom original theme music for this show, and Dark Materia, who kindly gave us permission for the use of the Picard song as our theme music as well. We got to thank Bill Tilly, who makes trading cards about every episode using the hashtag GreatestGen on Twitter. They are always really funny, and he puts them out every week.
Everyone, the best. Thanks for listening week in and week out, friends of DeSoto.
Yeah.
We see you out there.
We should thank J.J. Lendl, who makes the movie poster of each episode, puts it out on Sunday. Deep Space Sundays, he calls them.
Yeah. With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is so hungry that it's willing to kill anything and eat it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.